This podcast is intended to support UK healthcare professionals with education. The information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment, and patients are encouraged to consult healthcare providers, including nurses, for any medical questions or concerns.
Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional, where healthcare professionals and experts by experience discuss the latest hot topics in the worlds of stoma, continence care and specialist practice. I'm Hannah Patterson. I've worked in specialist care and I'm currently the Ostomy Care Associate Education Manager at Coloplast. On today's podcast, I'm joined by Coloplast Ambassador Sam.
It's definitely been a big change in my life, for sure. You know, I don't want to take morphine and tramadol. I hated it. Come back from that and come home, it was just one of the happiest times of my life, to be honest.
Hi Sammy, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Hannah.
Some of you may recognise Sammy's voice. Sammy actually joined me, it was the end of last year now, wasn't it, for Ask the Ostomate?
It was, probably just before Christmas.
Yeah, it was asked by the nurses from ASCN, so we have met you very briefly before, but it's so nice to have you on your own, to get to know you a little bit more and have a few more conversations. I'm sure some of you won't mind me saying that I'm really glad speaking to you today from your own home, because when we spoke to you on Ask the Ostomate, bless her, Sammy was an absolute trooper and was actually recording from her hospital bed at that point, weren't you?
I was. Oh, yeah, that was a difficult end to last year, for sure, but I'm so good to be home, so good to be back in my own home and at least being able to do these things on my kitchen table. It makes a difference.
A little bit more comfortable.
It really is.
So now, if you could just do a little bit of a recap. So where you're from, the type of stoma you had, and just a brief reason as to why, if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously I'm Sammy. I'm 27 years old. I live in West Lancashire. And I've had my urostomy now for pretty much a year. And it's been a journey, to say the least, to be fair. And I kind of almost don't know where to start and end that one, really. My bladder in general went into failure about 3 years ago. And it all happened quite sudden. It happened sort of overnight, really. I woke up one morning and couldn't go for a wee. But I didn't really understand at the time what was happening. I was just woke up in loads of pain. And in the end, after, you know, an hour or so, I took myself to A&E. I knew something was really not okay. And you know, they asked the usual questions, have you been for a wee this morning? And I was like, no, I'm in far too much pain to think about having a wee. I didn't quite put two and two together that actually might be the cause of said pain. So once we actually did try and go, I couldn't. Long story short, I ended up having to have an emergency surgery that evening in hospital. I had like a litre and a half of urine in my bladder that I couldn't get back out again, and they couldn't catheterise me either. So I woke up with a catheter then, an indwelling catheter, which I had quite a short period of time, but basically my bladder never did wake up again. We tried treatments and medication and did loads of testing, and it just showed that it had just kind of gone to sleep and it never really regained consciousness again. But the indwelling catheters, because they couldn't catheterize me and I couldn't just have routine changes in clinic and things like that, they decided to put a suprapubic catheter in. So that was a surgical catheter through my belly, and that went okay. It just came with a lot of infections. And I hear that a lot with catheters in general. You know, you have a foreign body, it's kind of inevitable. So I kind of knew it was going to happen, but it really did happen. I had them constantly and I was in and out of hospital, and it got to the point where certainly the last year I was just constantly on antibiotics every week in hospital once a month. It just got to the point where it just wasn't okay. And, you know, I'd go into hospital for 2 weeks, be on IV treatment, go home for a week, the symptoms would start again. You know, we sampled back in, back to the hospital. And I got referred to like a specialist urologist in Liverpool to just say, like, we can't keep doing this dance with this young girl. Like, we don't know what else to do. The antibiotics got to the point where there was only one IV treatment that was working, that was I was sensitive to. I'd become resistant to all other antibiotics. And this one was also dwindling, you know, the one that I did have. So it got to the point that if I was to have these infections and carry on and turn septic, we wouldn't have really had anything to necessarily treat it with. So we got in sort of a bit of a pickle, really. But when I did go in to see that urologist in Liverpool, he was amazing and just basically said, we're just going to take it out. And it seemed very dramatic at the time. It hadn't really entered my head, to be honest with you. I don't know what. It seems a bit naive looking back, but I don't know what I was going to find out, really. I didn't really know what a urostomy was. I knew about stomas, but I knew that, from my knowledge, they were bowel stomas. I didn't actually understand that you could have one for your bladder at all. So when he was explaining it, I was kind of like just blowing my mind. Like, okay, so we just whip it out, we pop a bag on, and that should be the problem solved.
Ta-da!
Yeah, he was like, well, pretty much. Yeah, there's, you know, some new plumbing involved, but that's the gist. And yeah, we had that done with him, and I was nervous. I was really scared, I think, because I didn't have a lot of education behind what that was and what that was going to look like for me. But at the same time, I think it sometimes helps in a strange way when you don't have a choice in the matter. It was happening whether I liked it or not, and you know, you like it or lump it at that point. And yeah, it was a nerve-wracking time in my life, and my husband was great. He helped me sort of work through that stage of coming to terms with what was going to happen. We had a little bit of a wait for theatre slots and stuff, so I was still back and forward in hospital for, I think it was a few months really, by the time the surgery actually came around. And yeah, it was life-changing. It was in many aspects. I've had complications from the surgery, but generally speaking, the bladder issues was solved there and then. You know, no bladder, no infections. It really was as simple as that at the time.
And that was sort of June last year, as you said. Now, obviously, fast forward a few months. I know we already mentioned that around the end of last year, you were in hospital. So what changed then? Because I know it was quite a prolonged hospital stay that you had at that point, wasn't it, the back end of last year? I know you said it was life-changing. You went through quite a positive time then initially after your surgery where things were so much better. What sort of happened between that June and the back end of last year? What changed?
Pretty soon after the surgery, I went into the surgery with bowel problems. It's not that they appeared, you know, after the surgery. It's not that they was absolutely A-OK and then they wasn't. I did have this problem. I had a really slow transit bowel. I was on laxatives, all that sort of fun stuff beforehand. So we knew that this, you know, may not aid that situation. We're going to take a small piece of your small bowel away. It isn't going to be happy about it, if you know what I mean. But has to happen. We'll work through the consequences afterwards, which we then did have to work through. So I think, as a start, you put it down to post-op and you think, well, I've just had a bit of bowel removed. Things aren't going to be happy. It is painful. I was feeling really, really sick if I was to eat. Or, well, to be fair, I didn't really eat. I think at the start, you start after surgery on like yogurt and soft foods, things like that. And I started just to become really sick after trying to have a yogurt or Fortisips and things like that. But I slowly persisted and, you know, carried on. And I thought, well, as the weeks go by, the bowel will, you know, it'll heal, everything will settle in there and it will get better. But as the weeks and months went by and, you know, I started dropping quite a lot of weight and feeling quite unwell because I just wasn't keeping things down, I soon realised that it wasn't going to get better. You know, things wasn't really improving the way we would like them to. And it was October last year in the end that I finally went into hospital. To be fair, I didn't even know what was going to happen on the back of that. I didn't envision this big hospital stay. I just kind of was like, anything I am eating or drinking, I'm vomiting. I've had this big surgery. I probably shouldn't have got to this point without coming in, to be fair. But here I am. Like, what's going on? Do you know what I mean? What can we do here? And we did loads of tests. We had endoscopies, you know, all sorts of cameras and scans and things. And the long and short of it, they kind of worked out that, well, they've now diagnosed me with gastroparesis, which is essentially a paralysed stomach, but also my bowel. So, I've always had sort of a slow transit bowel, but since then it's kind of affected the entire GI tract. But I'm now waiting for an ileostomy, so a second stoma for my bowel, and a surgical feeding tube. So I have my nasal tube at the moment, which I'm fed through, like through my nose, and I've had that since October last year, and that's sort of carrying on, but as a long-term measure, we are going to put a surgical feeding tube in because the stomach just cannot digest food anymore, basically. Anything that I do try and eat, it will just sit in my stomach and won't be digested. It can't get to the bowel, so I, you know, would be sick. And that's kind of the situation that we're in. So this tube goes directly to my jejunum, to my small bowel, and I'm fed feed 24/7, like drip through into my bowel, and I have my fluids through that as well. So It's definitely been a big change in my life, for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, you are absolutely incredible, because also what Peter is, Sammy is the most blinged up person I have ever met with a feeding tube. Sammy's feeding tube is the most glamorous thing you will ever see. You have your stickers that are just absolutely gorgeous that hold into your nose. And then I'm also led to believe that your feeding tube pole is also quite spectacular as well. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. It does have fairy lights. It does have a little basket cable tied on it. Why not? If I have to traipse around the house with this thing 24/7, it's going to look cute.
I think that's such an amazing word, because when it comes to surgeries and things like that, body image is something that so many people get concerned about when it comes to stomas, feeding tubes, anything. And the fact that you've taken what you've got and you've got, actually, do you know what? I am going to make this blooming marvellous. I'm going to make it absolutely gorgeous. And I'm guessing you've already started looking at stoma bag covers for things like that. I'm going to hazard a guess, knowing
you. I do make some, to be fair. Yeah, I do make stoma bag covers. I started to make a lovely one in like a silk, and it looks so pretty. It's so nice. It's really nice to wear with your pyjamas. So I'm a sucker for anything like that. Anything pink, frilly, silky, I'm there.
I think they should model a new Barbie on Sammy. I think that we could
have
a Sammy.
The feeding tube and stoma Barbie.
Absolutely. I think that would be absolutely amazing. I think actually you'd out glam Barbie, personally. I really, really do. Collar Plus Professional offers a lot of educational material for specialist nurses and healthcare professionals. Visit collarplusprofessional.co.uk to find out more. Now, I know you also mentioned briefly there about the support you've received from your husband, which is absolutely fantastic. So how long were you married for before all this happened? I know you said that initially started that you woke up one morning about 3 years ago and just couldn't wait. Yeah. Were you married at that point?
I was. Me and Kieran have been together a long time. So today, actually, it's our 13-year anniversary. So we've been together lots of years.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. We were so young. I was 14 when we got together and Kieran was 15. So I feel lucky sometimes that I've had him through all of this. You know, he's seen me at my worst, my best, and everything in between. But he's also seen me like beforehand, which sometimes is difficult. He had me before my illness, before my disability, any of that. So sometimes and you should never compare, but I think back to those days and it's crazy how life can change so much. You know, one day we were two teenagers with no problems, and, you know, just how life has progressed is just...
I'd say it's just amazing to know that you've got that support there. Kieran is not the only member of your family that you have support from. I also know there are four leggies around as well, which haven't joined us as yet, which I'm quite disappointed about.
Disappointed? I am shocked. I have three sausage dogs all staring at me from under the table right now, giving me the eye, because they know I have a pile of crackers here ready to throw at them if they bark.
Now, going back to, again, looking the back end of last year when you're in hospital, how long was it you ended up in hospital for? I know it was quite some time.
It was. It was about 4 months all in all. It was like October and I came out in February this year. So it just feels like a whole bizarre time in my life. Like, to come back from that and come home, it was just one of the happiest times in my life, to be honest. Like, just the relief to be home. I still think about that. Like, the overwhelming joy was just sensational. I feel like when you're in hospital, and for anybody that has been in for any sort of time period, it feels double the length. You know, it feels like so much longer. You felt so detached from the outside world, and you kind of think in your head that the rest of the world just shuts off and pauses, you know, while this is all going on, but it doesn't. Everything carries on, and I came out and we're 4 months into, you know, a new year and everything. It's just absolutely crazy to be in so long, but spending Christmas in there was difficult, I guess. That was definitely something that I never pictured happening. We tried so hard to get home over Christmas, or just, you know, a few days, even New Year, but I just wasn't well enough. So as much as I didn't want to hear it at the time, you know, it's one of those things. And
you knew.
Yeah, we did make the most of it, though. My husband and my little sister came into hospital and we had some video calls with family and we did our presents in hospital. We bought Richie, one of the sausage dogs, came in on Christmas Day, and all the nurses loved him. So we did make the most of it. It was funny, to be fair, but it's one that I definitely would not love to repeat anytime soon.
Yeah, you were in for such a long period, but I know you advocate so much for the care that you received over that time, and the fact the nurses pushed to get things like little Richie to come in and see, things like that.
Did go above and beyond. Any nurses and doctors listening from Ward 14A, honestly, I can't thank you guys enough. You made the entire situation. I'm such generally just a light-hearted, you know, I just get on with things. I'm a very positive human being, I guess. But even things like that, being put in that situation, and I think it got to like month two, as I definitely got into month three, I really started to struggle a little bit. You know, life is happening and mine is just not. And we didn't have as much answers. The feeding tubes wasn't working. Anytime I had conversations with doctors, just nothing was put in dry. Fix a problem and find a problem, and I'd have a test done and there'd be more tests. I can't even count on two hands how many tests that I had done in that place, and all the endoscopies and scans and things like that. And there was always something else to work on. There was always something else to find, and building up my feed was a real struggle, because you've got to be able to tolerate enough feed to be able to sustain yourself. And because my bowel isn't working, I can't sustain a lot going into my bowel at one time. So that took so many months to sort of get up to that point where I could go home. It was just such a process on every level. And during that hospital stay, I actually also came off all my opioid medication. So I went in on quite a lot of painkillers from my urostomy surgery and from all those years with infections and all the pain that I used to struggle with in my pelvic area and my bladder. I'd been put on so much, and it got to the point where my body was reliant on it. And if I went down on doses, I would feel really, really ill and I'd go into withdrawal. That was a really scary place to be, because, you know, I don't want to take morphine and tramadol. I hated it, but my body got to the point where it needed it. So in that admission, I went in on maybe four different opioids on maximum strength, and I came out in February on none. So that was a huge thing. And we went under pain management there and did the whole, you know, coming down and the withdrawal in there in hospital. So to be able to come out, not only just to get home, but to be able to come out on no opioids and no painkillers was just amazing.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, that's a positive to take away from it there as well. Although at the time you weren't getting some answers, eventually you did get those answers. And I'd say you were able to see progress that, because, I mean, I'm just seeing from the point of view of, as well, you know, planning more surgery and things like that. And if there was nowhere for you to go as far as pain relief went, that would have been quite frightening, the thought of having more surgery. Almost where do you go then on the pain relief aspect?
Well, that's where we are now, because obviously I'm waiting for my ileostomy now and the surgical feeding tube. And I feel so much more relaxed that I know that when I am given said painkillers at the time of that surgery, that they are going to work, because my body's not used to them. And with my urostomy surgery, my recovery in the early days was so slow because of that. You know, I went into that surgery on all these things and my body was used to them. I took them every single day. And it got to the actual urostomy. I remember coming round and I remember just absolutely writhing around in pain. But it was only because I took morphine that morning, I took tramadol that morning. All these things that you would normally have on the back of these surgeries was just not going to cut it. So I was putting ketamine, morphine, and then I had like local anesthetic being dripped into my abdomen as well. We had all sorts of weird and wonderful ways, and it was slow. Even then, the pain was awful. But, you know, as the days go on, it does get easier. And I think I got home in the third week. And then once I was home, it was easier to build up in your own space then. And it got to the point where I could slowly get out of bed and get to the bathroom on my own. And that was a turning point, really.
Is that Ricky that's joined us now, or is that one of the others?
This is Rio. This is the little madam. She's actually just barking at the TV. It must be over the ribs. I don't know what's going on.
She's not keen on whatever's being served, obviously.
No, she's not, honestly, no.
I really cannot thank you enough for joining me for this day. It's been amazing to get to hear a little bit more about your story. And obviously, it's a story that's still very much ongoing. So I feel that there is a chapter two in this recording. I really, really do.
There definitely will be. I'm going to redo this all again with a second stoma, and we can chat again when I'm on the other side of that, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Like I say, we'll put a to be continued underneath this one, I think.
absolutely. Hopefully after the next surgery, it can just be the end, though. That would be nice.
Absolutely. Then it's chapter closed, book finished, done.
Book short, yeah, in storage, no more.
Absolutely. And I've absolutely got my fingers, toes, everything crossed for you that you get that surgery soon. Obviously that everything goes really well. I know I'll hear any updates, but we'll look out for you. And thank you so much for joining us and for the doggies joining us as well. At the end, they obviously heard me saying that I wondered where they were.
Thank you, Hannah. It's been a pleasure, honestly.
Thanks ever so much. And to everyone listening, we'll see you in the next episode. Thank you for listening. To see more of the wide variety of education we offer, please visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk. See you next time.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is a Vibrant Sound Media production for Coloplast Professional.